Okay, so let's actually applaud our two presentations again, because those were... an amazing way to start 3 days together, and just very provocative and beautiful. So we spoke beforehand about a few things we'd say to begin before we open the floor up. And by the way, we started 15 minutes late, so can we have those 15 minutes? Okay, because we've been on time, and we do want some time to talk and then to open the floor up. So 15 minutes late, okay, everybody, because we started 15 minutes. We wanted to acknowledge the structure of the 3 days in a framing way by asking one sort of pat question, but an important one, which is our manifesto is called Beyond Story and the 3 days is called Against Story, and those are different words. We actually started ours called Against Story and changed it to Beyond Story. So we wanted to sort of use that as a way for all of us to think about where we are with story and what our relationship to it is as documentarians and theorists and political people. So given your two presentations, would you say, where do you sit in the beyond against story framework, and how, or, because we actually had a really interesting conversation amongst ourselves about those words, but I would like to hear that in relationship to what you presented. Just how you think about that right now, and everyone will probably be thinking about that in relation to their own work as well.
Okay. Well, in my case, I think the idea of being against story is a kind of, to me, is a more defined position than beyond story. Beyond story is like, well, you could be kind of anywhere beyond story, but being against story is kind of, you have something that you're trying to do in a very concrete way. And for me, in this film, there were moments where I was kind of like, yeah, I have to be against story because the expected stories in some of those places that I'm working in are stories of suffering, stories of victimhood, or stories of resilience, and they've kind of been overdone already. As well as the kind of question of like, well, documentary in certain contexts can sit so close to acts of surveillance, or in certain spaces where people are already being surveilled, what does it mean to document and tell the stories of people, right? So. For me, being against story in this project was a question of maintaining anonymity of people. I'll think more about beyond story and maybe say something else. Yeah.
Both beyond and against make me a little uncomfortable, at least on day one. I guess I would be more comfortable thinking in terms of maybe possessing story versus being possessed by it. You know, it's like, are you subject to myth, ideology, religion, or have greater autonomy, greater narrative autonomy? You know, that might be a call. And the other thing is, I have a feeling that in the future, we won't remember the states of in story and out of story, whatever those might be, so much as we'd remember the tension and between them, the tension between being, you know, the tension that's about trying to get agency back. So, very messy thought, but.
Alisa?
I don't think I'm going to answer that question. I'll ask maybe a different one. I mean, there were so many provocative thoughts in both of these presentations, and ways in which, you know, they're kind of, you know, I don't think it's exactly about them kind of feeding one another as much as expressing the possible directions that these things can go, and I am hoping to hear a lot more about that over the course of these few days. What does this mean The beyond story, the against story. I like the double meaning of against story. It also is a kind of propping up and leaning against in a way. I mean, it doesn't go away. And I don't think we should ever think it will go away. That's part of our decision to talk about beyond, right? It's there. And Rick is in some sense giving agency back, you know, death of the author, right? The agency of the story is in the audience. The audience can make things up, and they will inevitably, narrativize in some sense. But I'm just wondering, Rick, in relation to what we just saw in Sindhu's film, Sindhu's project, whether you still want to banish filmmaking, whether filmmaking, I mean, what was that provocation? Do you continue to kind of position yourself in that way against not story, but filmmaking, that being the problem, perhaps? I just wanted to hear a little bit about that in relation to a project like this, which actually does not seem to me to be the problem.
No, I thought it was actually beautiful. I especially loved its sort of topography, you know, how the periphery of the lake, it's a spatial, you talked about spatiality, and it's a film that attempts to counterpose space for time, which I think is really incredibly interesting and also beautiful. I think all I probably really care about is a more balanced ecosystem of media, where of different ways of making media and different ways of behaving in a room. It's just so skewed right now. That's all. Play around with it a little bit, problematize it a little bit. I mean, I love TV. I go to the movies, you know.
Did you want to talk a little bit about some of the rethinking that you were doing in real time after listening to Rick's presentation?
I've just kind of finished the film, and the very end of the film, there's someone who is asking me this question of, oh, so where can I come and watch this film? And I don't really have an answer at that moment. But it was something that then I was thinking about as I was editing the film. And seeing Rick's presentation made me think, yeah, like, here's a film that actually there's plenty of space for audiences to be talking. There's lots of room for that. And there's nothing that says that we have to be watching it with intent and be quiet. And I really like that sense of the cinema space not having to be one of like intense focus, but a kind of not one that's kind of policing the way we have to hold ourselves and breathe and be quiet. And so it just kind of set me thinking about that I need to think more about how the film will circulate as well, and that the intervention isn't always only within the film, and also thinking about stories as residing outside of the films, which you talked about, that they can come and go, and there's a constellation of stories of which a film can be a part of, not necessarily the thing that encapsulates it, was really interesting to me. So it kind of made me go back on what I said at the end about stories having a pastness to them, because after listening to Rick, it was kind of evident that that doesn't have to be the case.
I mean, the film has a beautiful way of being deeply, documentary in the classic sense of the world, you know, deeply indexical, but also at the same time, the high def camera is an amazing defamiliarization tool. Verisimilitude is a kind of defamiliarization, and I just have a feeling that. Does this have a presence, will this have a presence in the community where you've shot it? Because I just imagine people seeing the dogs differently and seeing the labor differently and seeing that scene where the kid kicks the ball in and there's that uniformed man and everybody's coming and going along that lane. There's so much going on there, you know?
Yes, I right now have a visa situation that's keeping me from going back, but I really, really want to and hope I will at the end of this year.
So I want to say one more thing and then we'll open it up, which is that in my own thinking as a scholar and activist and maker, I have also been kind of against cinema and indexicality lately for reasons we could talk about later. But what both of your projects, your speeches, your showing did for me was remind me why I need and love cinema, which I forget a lot of the time right now. And that has not, and this is what our manifesto is about, is not just about a good story. Okay, it can be. But what you two performed and showed us was the pleasure in looking and not knowing, the pleasure and not just, and I don't want to stay on pleasure, the complexity of thought, what it means to hear analysis that is not, that is new to you, that makes your brain zing, what it means to look and feel. These are not experiences of story. They are part of cinema. And, you know, against, beyond, I don't really care. The manifesto is simply about trying to signal all of the ways that cinema can and does feed us. And I just thought the two of you did that so well. So thank you for opening up the event in that way, and perhaps this is a time to hear from the audience. Doesn't it need to be a Q&A? It can be statements, it can be your thoughts. If you have a question, that's fine, but you know, we're a community here and we're beginning.
We have a mic, so the mic will be run around to you.
Thank you all. I'm Warren from Santa Cruz. I risk being perhaps seen as an accommodationist amongst polemicists, but I wonder if it's possible to be pro-story and anti-story. And what I mean by this is if we look at certain academic works that are really for story, like a history of psychology that would start with Frederick Bartlett's work at the University of Cambridge in 1930, talking about how people remember things as stories. And if you don't give them stories, they nonetheless still remember them as stories. And this tradition continues on through Jerome Bruner's work and this kind of what he called the narrative construction of reality. So regardless of what we make as artists, this tradition in psychology would tell us people remember them as stories anyways. So is it possible to be an anti-story person and a pro-story person too, if you think about it like that?
So we're not, that's why we're not against story. They're against story. We think story does all kinds of good stuff. We just don't want to talk about it because that's what everyone else is talking about. It's taking up too much airspace. But I would say, so again, not, like here, affect theory and work in affect, just as one example, seems important to say, sure, people remember things as stories, and people often remember things as a visceral experience in their body. It's like, God bless the psychologists who have thought that through. I'm sure it's true. And thank God for the psychologists who have thought of other ways that we know our past and know ourselves. So it's that's why we use the word beyond. And you know, we're very interested in thinking about what story does too. It's just in the documentary world that has taken up all the oxygen. Anyone else on that?
I think Warren is right. In my work, I rely on the audience to put things together, which they do in their own way, because I think they're rightly or wrongly, there's an I don't know if it's innate or acculturated, but among people I know, my world, there's a need for narrative. this may be weird. I was reading Mrs. Pigglewiggle the other day. Do people remember Mrs. Pigglewiggle? One of the things Mrs. Pigglewiggle does when little kids try to tell her their dreams and they get all balled up, and then I flew in a helicopter, and then and they're trying to remember, and they're doing, you know, Freudian secondary revision at the same time that they're telling their story to Mrs. Pigglewiggle, and she says, oh, and then you picked the flowers and woke up, right? And she completes the stories for them completely arbitrarily, and the kids are satisfied and they stop so the next kid can talk. So there's this sense of, you know, satisfaction and pleasure, but it doesn't really have rules to it, you know? Anyway, I hate to cite Mrs. Pigglewiggle here, but.
Hi, I'm John, I'm from Santa Cruz too. I was struck by thinking about the difference between, Rick, when you say you like TV and cinema just fine, but don't want the story imposed, and then looking at, is it Sindhu? Looking at your piece, which you called it a film, and I look at it and I think, I come from the museum world, and I look at it and I go, no, it's video art. And I'm reminded of something that David Anton wrote about video, probably in the early 70s, I can't remember exactly, and he talked about it and the problem that it has distinguishing itself from what he calls its terrible parent, which is television. And if we think of video in a museum or gallery context, film or cinema in a, you know, sort of cinema context where people walk in the door, they plan to be there for 90 minutes or 2 hours and walk out, or TV seen in a private space with friends maybe or alone. One of the things is all of those posit different viewing expectations that are there in advance. And the necessity for story is very different in those three spaces because of that expectation of who's the audience that the use of the medium convenes. So there's, I share the frustration with story right now. Particularly in the mass media and the construction of hero narratives, and the whole Marvel universe is just this immense cancer in some way. But on the other hand, that's one of the reasons, I guess, why I like the museum space, even though sometimes it's hard to get me to stay for a very long time in a video. And if you have an hour-long video in a gallery, from having worked in them for a long time, I know almost nobody sees all of it. And that poses another problem. But I guess my question is, for you, all of you, is it an issue of economic control of a given medium? Yes, but can you also maybe move into a different space? And I think, Rick, you've certainly done that by creating the kind of screenings that you've done, where you essentially invented your own sort of medium that isn't one or the other. And for people who are in documentary, in a film space, do you need to stay there, I guess is the question. And I know there are problems, all these spaces have problems and economic constraints. They're that we never escape that, but I'm just curious about that, about the motion between and people moving from film and documentary into, you know, not a show that's one night, but maybe it lasts 3 months or something. And the audience is small, but it accretes over time, and eventually you do reach a number of people.
So many questions there, but thank you. You're totally right that the context, the contracts that people go into a context with kind of really change the way that the work is received. I studied in San Diego in the school that Eleanor and David Anton were part of, yeah. So I am kind of super aware of that, and I have shown films like this in installation contexts where the film is not the only thing that people are looking at. There are other works in conversation in a spatial arrangement, and often I'm thinking about the work I'm making as having enough room for other things to also be in conversation with it. So it's a conscious decision to not have it be completely hermetically sealed in and of itself. So I'm definitely thinking about being able to move between contexts. But that said, I am really interested in the way that cinema allows people to have a shared sense of a shared experience. So they're in a space and time together, and that I think is really important for me. That video art doesn't necessarily demand. Yeah.
I recently requested a video from an artist, and I referred to it as a documentary, and I was suggesting that also an MA student of mine might write about it in relation to a documentary class that I was teaching, and the response was immediate, which was to say, there must be some mistake, this is an artist video, not a documentary, and therefore it is inappropriate for your student to write about it, and I won't send it. And I thought, that is just so fantastically classical as a response. There is an incredible tension between, right, you know, the art world and artists. Their recent discovery of documentary is marked over and over again with its distinctions. It, you know, close to documentary, near documentary, subverting documentary, but it's never documentary. So my response was, well, I think we may have different definitions of documentary, and I would, of course, you know, I respect your definition of your film, but I may see it differently. But I think Sindhu, you know, knows well what context she wants to make this project in, and I think the art context is actually one domain where it is possible to make films other than, you know, the storified narrative, the character-led. But it also has these other demands. Often, you know, multi-channel is privileged over single-channel, you know, certain kind of spatial arrangements are often also privileged. And if that's not the intention, or if the group screening, if the more communal experience is what people are interested in. I think, I mean, documentary has always been in multiple places. It has always operated. It's not obviously just television, never has been, but it also hasn't always been story. And so I think, you know, just drawing also from not just the history of experimental film and artist film, but of documentary itself, it's all there. What we're talking about, it's actually there in that history. And I think that's part of what we were trying to do, is excavate that and bring it back and say, wait a second, this, you know, wasn't ever thus. There is a history here.
And then one last thing to kind of circle back to our manifesto. You know, I think one of the things about your comment is that there's a nostalgia for when these forms were discrete that doesn't, those discrete histories hold true, and our discrete memories of the possibilities of these different genre matter to us, but everything has collapsed into, you know, the digital space, and it's very hard for us to hold on to, like, this is art video, and this is the documentary, and this is the screening room, and this, you know, when it's all on our watch or whatever. One of the things that we say is that in a moment where this collapse is happening, which can also be a moment of extraordinary possibility, so like collapse or explosion, it's so weird that story is being written into these internet experiences. And so, like, our video is not all of our manifesto. Our video is actually the parts of the manifesto that people wanted to read. So that's where you get the doubling and the tripling, because lots of people like those parts. But there's a lot more in there, and that's one of the claims that we're very interested in thinking about, why storied experiences are dominating new media, which does not need to be narrative at all. And, you know, it will be most exciting to us when it is not. So that's a little shout out to there. So please go read the whole thing if you haven't. We're over our 15 to 20, so I think we should end, but it's your show, so you can direct us. Should we end here, or should we take one more? One more from the room.
Hi, thank you so much. This is such an inspiring opening. So I wanted to go back to something that Elisa said, which is that I've been thinking about a lot, which is this question of the author. And I think that, you know, when we say story, I think everybody think, or whatever, I think there's an idea of what we mean, but actually the more I think about it, the more I think what we're really talking about is a kind of structure of authorship or an understanding of authorship. And so if when we're saying story, we're talking about a single authored experience, I think one thing that's really interesting about the juxtaposition of Rick and Sintu's work tonight is that they both suggest different models of a kind of authorship experience. And so in a way, Rick, you're offering up a kind of multi-authored space within cinema. And I think Sintu, you're working in a tradition of a kind of film experience that gives space for the viewer to also have their own kind of authorship within the experience of story. So that's my offer.
I'll keep it quick. So one thing. So we're throwing around this word story, against story, for story, binary is always dangerous. But I think part of the work of this conference, and I hope at least for me, is all the extra new definitions we can bring to story, right? And I think that we're defining story, we're not defining it actually, which is great, but I think the ways that we're using it is implying it's a single character narrative arc, or it has a three-part dramatic arc. And I think, is story only that? Is that the only way we're gonna interpret that word? And if so, is that why we're all kind of just allergic to it? But the name of this conference is so beautiful, Poetics and Politics, and I just wonder if we can also, I don't know, re-inject some new poetry into the concept of story, but not just totally go beyond it, but also stay with the trouble, as Donna would say, with this word. So